Wish fulfillment can be a very rewarding thing. Hear from a Bloomington Normal man who makes dreams come true. And there's a move to reconsider statewide economic development incentives used to bring Rivian to Normal and other businesses to Illinois. The EDGE tax credits. Those stories just ahead on WGLT's Sound Ideas. Good afternoon, I'm Charlie Schlenker. The University of Illinois saw enrollment growth has fallen most categories, but not minorities.
And asking the fundamental question of why didn't you accept our offer to come, it was basically what we've been hearing in general, even before the pandemic. Couldn't afford to.
The U of I Urbana Chancellor Robert Jones says it wasn't like they didn't try. They offered admission to a historic high number of minority students. And it's pumpkin time in central Illinois. Those stories and a Bloomington Normal news update just ahead. This is WGLT's news magazine, Sound Ideas, on 89.1 FM and WGLT.org. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Like Illinois State University, the University of Illinois in Urbana, enrollment did all right this fall. The U of I at Urbana reports its largest number of incoming freshmen ever, but the class of 2025 is notably short on minority students compared to years past. Sarah Nardi sat down with the president of the U of I system, Tim Killeen, and UIUC Chancellor Robert Jones, who stopped by on a statewide media tour. Asked about a report that cites the school as one of several in the Big Ten that have a smaller percentage of black undergraduates than they did 20 years ago, Jones says those numbers don't tell the full story.
Well, I'll debate that issue because for the first time in the last 10 years, this is the first time where the number of black and brown students numerically has gone down as a part of the first year class. But every year for the last decade, that number has increased.
Do you think it's the pandemic?
It's absolutely the pandemic, because I can tell you we offered more admissions to underrepresented students and students in general this year than any other period in our history. But the yield went down, particularly for this first year cohort. And asking the fundamental question of why didn't you accept our offer to come, it was basically what we've been hearing in general, even before the pandemic. Couldn't afford to, you know, family circumstances. As you know, the pandemic has had a much more dire impact upon black and brown families, African-American, Latinx, than it has for other populations. And so notwithstanding the fact that we were offering fee tuition and fees as a part of Illinois commitment, even with that a significant amount of support, a large number of African-Americans and Latinx students still couldn't afford to attend. And so that's what we're hearing from our interviews. But overall, our overall enrollment of African-American and Latinx students remain high. It's just that we lost about 80-something students that we thought would be coming, but we saw a significant decline in the number of students that actually accepted our offer. And we're trying to figure out, you know, what we're going to do to get some of those students back here
semester. What can you do? That was definitely my next question. It sounds like you offered a fair degree of support. And if that's failing, then what can be done to bring these students back into the fold?
Well, we've been exploring a number of different ideas. A few years ago, in order to make sure that we got more students in, we actually picked up a phone and called them and wanted to know why they
did. Did they pick up? Do kids pick up these days?
Absolutely they did. You know, we had over 100 and some phone calls that we made to individual families, and we got some of them to say yes, because there's a bit misperception about the sticker price to attend a campus like Urbana-Champaign, and I'm sure it's true for Springfield and Chicago as well, versus what it actually costs. And a significant number of our students receive financial aid. That's probably something that's not known well enough, that very few of our students, you know, pay the full cost of attending. So we're looking at all kinds of things that we need to do to make sure that this thing that's really driven by COVID, the disparate impact that COVID has had on black and brown families, that we can still send a very strong message that we are welcome here and we're going to do all we can to support you. So we haven't given up, as we never do. We just have to think about strategically what we can do to get more of those students to think about coming, you know, spring semester.
And if you, if I could just say, if you look at the whole system, the U of I system, we're really thrilled with the enrollment gains in the last 6 years. We planned for a 15% enrollment growth. We ended up with a 16% enrollment growth. All the numbers have gone up. Numbers of Illinois residents have gone up. Total number of underrepresented minority have gone up. We've seen gains at the graduate level as well as international level, a sort of a building back of a really an engine for young people. There are some areas which you pointed out where we really need to focus on preparation, on welcoming, and on the fiscal issues that are of critical importance to the future. But we're really thrilled with this bounce back from COVID. We've not just bounced back, we've just zoomed ahead.
I wonder if you worry, and you know, this is certainly not a concern that would be limited to your university system, but just in general, do you worry about the possibility of losing a generation of students and how that changes not only the landscape of higher education, but of, you know, of the state economy and the larger national economy, if we're unable to connect with these students that have really been set back by COVID?
That's a great question, and it's so important. And it's not just the college age kids, it's the middle and high school kids. There's been setbacks throughout the educational pipeline. And we've got to really look hard at what that means and open our doors as wide as we can and provide the kind of resources and so forth. One of the things that we're focusing on at U of I and the system is the mental health of our students. Many of them have been in isolated circumstances. They haven't been able to make the friends that you're genetically predisposed to do at that level. So we're very concerned about the mental health of this generation of incoming students. But you're exactly right. I think the damage is partially visible, but partially invisible. And we need to sort of be working really generously with partners in government, partners in the K-12 system, in the communities, to ensure that we don't lose people. Because it's hard once you've had a setback to recover and then get back in.
That was University of Illinois President Tim Killeen and Chancellor Robert Jones speaking with Sarah Nardi. Killeen says the university is working with communities around the state to spur innovation and develop on-ramps to the future accessible by people from all economic backgrounds.
Joe Stupak from Normal starts the day with WGLT's Lead Off Podcast. He likes the shorter 8-minute news digest.
It's done and produced in such a way that there's very good information that I can use and it applies to the community.
But on the weekend, Joe is ready to dig deep, so he listens to On the Media.
The media in our lives has become that much more ingrained and that much more important that it helps people understand that. It helps me understand it.
Joe is a student of the media, as he worked with the media professionally for many years, so this is high praise.
I consider WGLT to be the premier news source in the community.
Now Joe is a WGLT financial contributor. He thinks of himself as a partner with WGLT.
We need to have it in the community, and that's why I continue my support and ask others to support. Join the community that powers WGLT. Give now during the fall fund drive at WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas on 89.1 FM, WGLT, and WGLT.org, and you can make a contribution to keep Sound Ideas and other local news on the air at WGLT.org. State Representative Dave Vella filed a bill last week to beef up economic development incentives to help Illinois attract more of the electric vehicle production industry. Vella is a Rockford area Democrat whose district includes an auto plant. Part of the restructuring would increase the EDGE tax credit from 10 years to 20 years. The Rivian plant in Normal received some state incentives, you may recall as well. Republican State Senator Jason Berrickman has that auto plant in his community. Here's how he thinks the state should approach long-term incentives that can have a long-term effect on state and local coffers.
Well, I take a scrutinous eye to incentives. You know, that's just kind of a philosophy that I bring to the debate. But I don't draw a hard line in the sand and suggest that all incentives are, you know, automatically bad. I particularly think the EDGE tax credit has been a useful one, and it, you know, the principle is that there's some level of balance that's being played. So there's an incentive on the one hand, but there's an offset. that's a result of economic growth and employment-based growth, and there's metrics that are in place that the businesses have to meet. And so what that allows you to do is the math of whether or not it's a good deal for taxpayers. You know, it used to be you competed for jobs against places like China and India and places like that. Today, we compete for jobs against places like Texas and Georgia and the Carolinas. We have to equip our state with the tools necessary to attract these job creators while ensuring that the balance is available to make sure that it's still a good deal for taxpayers.
Well, the job figure for the potential Samsung plant has been talked about as 3,200 jobs. What level of state incentive would be proper for that number of jobs?
Well, again, it's a mathematical equation, but you know what you know is that 3,000 jobs in central Illinois is a massive number, right? And so the benefit from that wouldn't be felt just by Bloomington Normal. It'd be felt by, you know, the region, the entire state. You know, I don't know that I can quantify it, you know, immediately here, but I think that that is something that the economists can help us do.
Also being discussed as part of this package is some sort of temporary relief from local property taxes. That kind of incentive has usually been the province of local government units. The idea is apparently to make sure that the process to lure a big economic development project is not quite so cumbersome and complex as it has been in the past. What do you think of state-level ordering of relief from local property taxes?
Well, you know, I think it'd be much better if at the state level we would tackle property tax relief generally. One of the significant problems that exists in Illinois is our very significant property taxes that continue to rise in unpredictable amounts year after year. And so that creates an unstable environment that discourages people, businesses, and homeowners, quite frankly, from locating here. That's an issue that ought to be tackled at the state level. It's very complicated. I don't suggest that it's an easy one, but rather than picking and choosing at the state level who gets property tax relief, I think the state would be better served if we would tackle more holistically property tax relief. It requires some leadership from the governor's office, I think primarily, and a willingness to take on what is, you know, you described it earlier, one of the very tough issues that faces our state.
That's State Senator Jason Berrickman, who is a Bloomington Republican.
This is Sound Ideas on WGLT. I'm Ariel Jones with Jennifer Armstrong talking about the Fall Fund Drive. Your contribution at WGLT.org will help fund all of the local news you love on this station, like the daily news magazine you're tuned into right now, WGLT's very own Sound Ideas.
Every day, WGLT brings you the stories that help you understand the day's news. You've come to trust WGLT, especially during the pandemic, to bring you fact-based journalism. Now we're going to trust in you that you'll step up with a financial contribution to keep WGLT on the air, on your phone, smart speaker, and everywhere else you turn to us for news. Give now at WGLT.org.
It's important to have news you can trust because the media landscape is ever-changing. Social media and cable news are full of misinformation. Radio, television, newspaper, and digital are all changing. And oftentimes that change isn't positive for community news. More media organizations are run by out-of-town corporations. They are driven by profit margins, how much money they can deliver to their shareholders. When that happens, the needs of the community often go unmet.
WGLT is a locally owned and operated nonprofit. You've probably heard us say that, and here's why it matters. A big portion of our funding comes from you, the people who listen to WGLT, the people who read our stories, and the people who come to our events. This community is full of people who make WGLT what it is. And that is why we at WGLT must always strive to keep our community purpose in mind. You are the people we serve, not shareholders in some faraway place. That's why the money you contribute to WGLT has such a big impact on providing a community voice.
Your financial support at WGLT.org is the critical piece of our community funding. Contribute right now during the fall fund drive at WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Corey Sheeler is a State Farm executive who in his spare time rappels down skyscrapers, turns little girls into princesses, and conjures carnivals out of thin air. He doesn't technically have superpowers, but Sheeler is undoubtedly a hero to many families in Illinois. To date, he's granted 31 wishes through the Make-A-Wish Illinois Foundation. Sheeler was inspired to become a wish granter after developing a close friendship with his 6-year-old neighbor, Kate, who has brittle bone disease. He remembers Kate's family telling him that she really wanted a specially trained mobility dog, not just to help her, but as a friend.
That night I went home and sketched out a carnival for a neighborhood to raise money for the dog because it was a $13,000 dog. And I was like, this was going to be a big task for a family already taking care of a sick child. And in the course of 3 weeks, we raised $26,000. We had an incredible, huge carnival, 500 people in our cul-de-sac and neighborhood. We all wore, all the neighbors. I put different events in everybody's driveway. And it was just neat to see the community come together for this little girl. And then a couple months later, she got her mobility dog. And, I said that was just magic.
And that sounds like something that you would have to really draw on a natural sense of creativity in order to produce. And I bet COVID really challenged the ways in which you were able to exercise that creativity. And I know that you did a virtual trip to New York City for a little girl who really wanted to go and was unable to travel. And I would have to think that COVID pushed you kind of in new directions when it came to being creative to granting these wishes.
That's exactly right. I think it was a really powerful moment for Make-A-Wish because so many of the trips were travel. And when travel was put on hold, you had to be creative to pivot. You call it the pandemic pivot. And Ramona's thing that I did for her in New York City, again, bringing together community, because that little story, that $3 app that I bought on the App Store and copied and pasted her doing silly things around New York City, like a flash mob at Grand Central Station, or having breakfast at Tiffany's, and she wanted to meet the cast of Wicked. So instead of just having her in front of the Broadway show, I put her in the show.
Which is pretty cool. But for a lot of us, it's very difficult to think of sick children, to wrap our heads around the idea of a child who's suffering with a terminal illness or a critical illness. And I wonder, in granting these amazing wishes and becoming a part of these children's lives, what kind of toll that would take on you personally?
It has been hard. I've lost 5 of my 30 wish kids over the years. I've only had one child that I knew was terminal when I got the wish, but some I knew were going to have a lot of challenges down the road. So my job and my role and what I really enjoy is trying to bring as much happiness to them in the time that they have. And some of these kids, you really see them respond, and they are extremely resilient. So I've never, it's a crazy to say this, I've never seen a family say poor me. I've never seen a kid, cry in front of me. So that's probably made it a lot easier. I just get to see them happy.
So it sounds like even though, of course, there are elements of pain and of sadness, there's a real symbiosis there. And it's not only, the children and their families that get something out of these wishes being granted. It's you, too. It's good for you, too.
Yeah, it's fun. It's been an incredible journey over 12 years. But each one, I try to treat each one of them as though they were my backyard neighbor, Kate. So she passed away in 2014. She continues to inspire me. She was 6 years old. She having brittle bone. She was homeschooled. Her mom was extremely smart, taught her everything. So she had a favorite quote. And her quote was, "Be the change you want to see in the world." I'm like, what 6-year-old has a favorite quote? And when she passed away in 2014, I said, I need to adopt that as my life's motto and use her memory as kind of an inspiration to continue on doing wishes. So I treat every wish kid like they're Kate and put that much effort and love into each one of them. And you get that payback so much so much more.
That's Corey Sheeler talking about his work with Make-A-Wish Illinois. In 12 years working with children, he's granted 31 wishes. Sheeler says he's looking forward to many, many more. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Peoria and Illinois were once part of New France. While that legacy has mostly faded away, remnants of the Illinois Creole culture still linger in some remote parts. Tim Shelley has more.
Fiddler and historian Dennis Stromat may be one of the last living speakers of Illinois Country French. He learned language after discovering a remote village in Missouri back in the 1990s, where it was still widely spoken among older people.
I started going out into the communities and met a lot of the folks there, and I was fascinated, you know, and then I heard our French language spoken, not just English with a few French words in an accent, real French.
Stromat immersed himself in the village to soak in the culture, music, and language. But much of that history has since been swept away by the sands of time.
And now there's probably under 10 people, you know, that can, you know, I mean, it's basically effectively a dead language.
But Stromat says the language's death doesn't necessarily mean Illinois Creole culture also has to die.
Culture's not just language, you know. Culture's food, culture is gatherings, you know, culture is music, dance.
Stromat is giving a virtual presentation tonight at 6:30 at the Chillicothe Public Library. I'm Tim Shelley.
This is 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Pumpkin season is here. For many area farms, that also means it's time for tourists. John Ackerman is the owner of Ackerman Farms in Morton. He says they first opened to the public in 1999, and it has only grown from there.
I guess we're part of the agritourism industry. It's a real education and enjoyable, a real blessing to work with people in the community supporting us.
It has been a topsy-turvy season of ups and downs for pumpkin growers. Nick Roth, the owner of Roth Pumpkin Patch in Morton, says a lot of it came down to moisture.
Originally, at the beginning of the pumpkin season, we were kind of droughty and needed rain. And then we started to get rain. We were just getting some significant amounts all at once. We did not get the flooding like some of the other areas. And our pumpkin crop is actually excellent. We have a lot of pumpkins that we're picking right now.
About 85% of the world's canned pumpkin products are produced in Morton's Libby plant. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT Normal, made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. I'm Charlie Schlenker. You can find all our Sound Ideas interviews and stories at WGLT.org. And you can subscribe to Sound Ideas on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or NPR One. We'd like to know what you think of Sound Ideas. Comment on our Facebook page. We're WGLT-FM. Or follow us on Twitter. We're all at WGLT News. This is 89.1 FM, WGLT and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media.